Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you said, I'm Representative Chris Lisi from the 85th District, and Representative Schilling is here also to present this bill. Representative Schilling and I decided that it would be better just to focus all our efforts on one bill that we think we can get past this session. And what this bill deals with, Mr. Chairman and committee, distinguished committee members, is we're asking for a commission to be put into place, a nine-member commission, to look at this issue of the death penalty in Missouri and really examine it closely to see what exactly is going on here. And that's the first part of the bill, and we're pushing very strongly for that. And the second part of the bill, which we also would like to see, is to put a moratorium on the executions only while this commission is studying the issue. Now, Mr. Chairman, from my own personal viewpoint, I'm the banking chairman on the insurance committee, and I generally center on business issues. And I used to be for the death penalty. Until you see a lot of the national cases, I used to feel the same way that a lot of people do. They're for the death penalty. And I looked at the issue, and I felt like there was some cause for some of the reasons, like Governor Ryan and Janet Reno and some other people who are in our legal system who feel that maybe a moratorium is something that we should look at. And then when I really looked at the issue, I found that, yes, in fact, I needed to do something. I needed to come up here and sponsor a bill to set a commission in place and put a moratorium on this. This bill is not asking for the end of the death penalty or the abolition of it, which Representative Schilling's bill did. We dropped that to focus on looking at the issue. And that's what I'd like us to do just for a minute, is really look at this issue. I know you said you've looked at it, and just like in my hearing when I'm chairman, if I've looked at an issue so much, everything's blurred, and we don't really look at it, or there may be a few facets that we'll bring up that you haven't seen. So that's why I'm taking the time to point this out, maybe to slow the pace down a little, to really take a good look at it. And as you know, I'm not an attorney. I've never been a prosecutor. I've never actually looked into this area. But when I get into some technical banking issues or insurance issues, every once in a while someone from the outside comes in and does have a better idea. And I say, wow, I've been so involved in this, I haven't taken the time to really think about what you're pointing out. Maybe I have some of those ideas and Representative Schilling does and maybe we don't, but I'd beg your indulgence of the time to actually look at it and talk about it. And the first thing that I saw from an outsider looking at our death penalty and the way we handle capital cases in Missouri, and I have spent some time studying this, is the subjective nature and the complex nature of these capital cases and the two parts that go with them. And then when you take that and you really look at that, the way we do this, and you take it versus the finality of the death penalty, and then you look at the subjective room for human error, it really was very striking that we could take someone's life and possibly make mistakes. So I looked at it a little further, and I said, why do we have the death penalty, and why was I for it at first? And I think the real sense as to why people in the public are for the death penalty is, first off, it's a deterrent. Hey, it's going to stop murder. It's going to, if you do the crime, you're going to pay with your own life. But when you really look at that, and some recent studies that I've seen show that actually it's not a deterrent. It's not a deterrent to crime at all. And if you look at some of the academic studies, and if we undertake a study of our own, I think we'll see that the death penalty is not a deterrent to crime. So the next thing is, what do people want? The other reason we're for it is because the people back home want the death penalty. We want people, if they murder someone, we want them to pay with their own lives. But I've also seen a recent survey, and that is true, but if you word the question a little differently, how does the public feel about alternatives to the death sentence and other ways to punish, such as life imprisonment without parole and with retribution and some other things put in there? Public opinion is opposed to the death penalty and for alternatives. So I'd ask you to keep an open mind. The next thing is cost, you know, and I think the people who are involved in the system know that it costs a lot more to have someone on death row and to actually have them go through the whole process and then execute them versus putting someone in prison for life. And some of the recent figures that I've seen, and these are estimates, and I can get you where these estimates come from, Mr. Chairman, is it costs $80 million to the state of Missouri to execute 41 people. And I think we can break that down and realize it's a very expensive proposition and actually more expensive to have this death penalty than less expensive. There are other, some legal scholars that have been for the death penalty, like myself, much more brilliant than I am in law, who have come forth and said, no, I made a mistake, and I've changed my mind. And one of those is the U.S. Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun, who voted with the majority in the Grigg decision. And he concluded that this is the most recent death penalty, the most recent death penalty experiment has failed, and that no combination of procedural rules or substantive regulations can ever save the death penalty from its inherent constitutional deficiencies. So there is a growing body of people that actually see what this is doing. I've had some misgivings about the death penalty and questioned it for a while, and many of us know our colleague Glenn Hall, who I asked when he was here, and I said, Glenn, how do you feel about it? And he told me that it was in the Bible that he felt that we had the right to have the death penalty. And I took him at his word, but recently when I agreed to sponsor this bill, I went and looked at the Bible, and in 8 years I've never quoted the Bible, and I don't want to make it a habit, Mr. Chairman, but I looked at two different sections where King Solomon said an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and if you really look at that section, and you look at our law being based on Christian Judeo ethics, you see that King Solomon was really making a folly of that. And the other section I found that dealt with the death penalty is Cain and Abel. And when Cain killed Abel, if you look in the story, which I'm not going to go into, he wasn't killed. He was banished, and there was a sign put on his body so that no one would kill him in vengeance as to what he did. So I think if there are some people who go back into Scripture and say, you know, this is something that God or the Bible or whatever religion you are justifies, I think there's equal justification in Scripture that says, no, this is not what we want. Getting back at more of what I think the crux of the issue, and if you really look at it, if you get above our legal system, Mr. Chairman, what does the death penalty, I have a child who's 2 and 6, and when we put someone to death in the state of Missouri, and everyone here is responsible for that in some way or another, when we put someone to death, what does that say to our children? Does it say violence begets violence? Or who has the right of vengeance on someone else? Which person here has the right to take vengeance out? Or as it is now, do we collectively have the right to carry out this vengeance? And I just ask us to think about that. And think about that in the light of possibly with the subjective nature of our system and the errors that it's fraught with in regards to the way this is carried out. And I'm going to bring up a specific example at the end, Mr. Chairman. But one of the new enlightenments is the DNA testing and new technologies are finding a whole host of people on death row are innocent, and we're proving them innocent, and they're being taken off. And, you know, a lot of the critics have said, well, in Missouri we don't have that problem. You know, they do in Illinois, they do here, they do there. Well, Mr. Chairman, we have that problem in Missouri. And I'm going to point out a case in Missouri where a man was convicted of murder, put on death row, and we had to release him because he was wrongfully convicted. And for a number of reasons, Mr. Chairman, he didn't have the money. He didn't have the money to buy the defense to represent himself. He was railroaded by a system that he didn't have the money to buy a defense for. He didn't have the resources. And there are going to be other people to testify, if I don't keep being so long-winded, they'll be able to testify in relation to geographic, in relation to racial, in relation to jury disparity as far as selection and also jury instructions get to be very confusing in these trials. And I think what I'd like to do in conclusion is talk about a particular case and what happened in that particular case in Missouri, to where the opponents of this will say, it's not happening in Missouri. Our system's not broke. We don't need to fix it. Mr. Chairman, if you have the money, and this is a national problem, and you buy the right defense, you can get off. We see it in Colorado. We've seen it in California. We've seen it in cases all over the country. And unfortunately, I believe it's the case here, that a prosecutor can more easily railroad a poor person than he can a rich person. Mr. Chairman, there is a case in Missouri, and I thought I'd end on this point. There was a man named Clarence Dexter who was freed from Missouri death row as being innocent. He served a period of time on death row, I believe 7 years. And have you heard this case before, Mr. Chairman? Has the committee heard this case? If you have, I'll be a lot quicker with regard to it. Mr. Chairman, after this man was wrongfully convicted, 2.5 years ago, the Missouri Supreme Court agreed that prosecutors has overreached and falsely presented some general findings as positive proof, until a young attorney named Cindy Short revisited all the evidence in the police reports. This man would have died. And finally, he had a bright young attorney who took a look at his case and found out that there were other prints. There were other footprints, and there were other... She found evidence that Mr. Dexter had an aged and ailing attorney, including bloody footprint and a palm print lifted from the hood of his wife's car, neither of which belonged to him. And you know, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dexter to this date has said our state has offered him no apology for spending 7 years on death row. And he's just happy to be free. And I think, Mr. Chairman, someday the state ought to offer him an apology and not ever allow this to happen to anyone else again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to emphasize that I think Representative Lisi is correct in that we need to take sort of a time out, put the brakes on here, and examine our administration of this punishment. And 3 years ago, the American Bar Association publicly came out and supported these kind of studies and moratoriums, and I think it's wise to follow that. We're finding cases where there's innocence, true innocence, and some people can say, well, the system works sometimes, but sometimes it doesn't. And when we have the terminal punishment, I think it's very important that we look at how this is going on in our state. Somebody said, well, we don't have the problems here, maybe that Illinois does. And I said, well, maybe we haven't examined them to the depth that they've been examined over there. So I think it's important that we take a good look at this policy and try and advance it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we'd beg your indulgence to consider your expertise. If that could pass the committee and the moratorium would kill the bill, certainly we'd like to get the commission out. The reason we had the moratorium in there is there may possibly be, and there are much more credible experts than I, that may possibly have evidence that people on death row are innocent. And the reason we have that in there is we don't see any reason to execute someone who's innocent, and that's why the moratorium's in there. But if we can't get it out of the committee with the moratorium on there, certainly we'd appreciate bringing the commission out. That's why I said the commission and then the moratorium, the former and the latter. If the latter can't make it, we'd love to have the commission. Well, gentlemen, that's a very good question, and that's exactly why Representative Schilling came to me and said, you know, Chris, we need to drop my bill. We don't need to have that discussion on the table. Your last question is something that's not on the table here. What's on the table is your first question, which you're agreeing there is concern. So basically, we answered your question by Representative Schilling voluntarily taking that off the table and saying, all right, we realize that this may have more problems. But most reasonable minds can agree that there are problems with this current system. So to answer your question is, we've already answered that by Representative Schilling withdrawing his bill. We hope. We'd be glad to do that. The reason we had such a definitive date, if you remember, it is tied to the moratorium with this current language, so we had a definite stopping point. I'd be glad to extend that as more of an ongoing thing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am very honored today to have a former United States Senator here and a friend of mine, and I'd like to call our first witness, Senator Tom Eagleton.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak before the committee. My hearing is limited, and therefore I tend to talk loud enough to persuade myself of my own wisdom. So you would help me, sincerely, if I get too loud, to just tone me down. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, 6,000 individuals have been on death row around the United States since 1976. 80 of those were taken off of death row, because there was doubt as to their guilt. If one were a PhD in statistics at Missouri University, I guess one could say, well, 80 out of 6,000, that's 98.6. And only 1.4% were found wrong. Ted Williams, the best hitter in baseball, in my opinion, only batted .410. What's wrong with being right 98.6% of the time as a statistician? But what if one were to apply that same statistic, say, to flights in and out of the St. Louis airport? There are 1,400 landings and takeoffs every day at Lambert St. Louis. And if 1.4% of those went wrong, that would be 2 crashes a day at Lambert St. Louis if that were to occur. And it wouldn't take too many days of 2 crashes each before people said, wait a minute, am I going to get on TWA and be safe 98.6%? Or might I be one of those 1.4%? So statistics can be used in various ways. The first political job I had was Circuit Attorney of St. Louis. The next one I had was Attorney General here in Jeff City. Being Attorney General, frankly, is the best job I've ever had. Most interesting. I ran for both of those offices as an opponent of the death penalty. But I said that if elected, I'd have no choice but to utilize it, because that was then the law of Missouri. I was circuit attorney from 1956 to 1960, attorney general from 60 to 64. I checked with one of my old assistants at this hearing tonight, and it's his recollection that, as attorney general, it's his recollection that we had perhaps 5 or 6 executions where our office had obtained the affirmation of the verdict below. So I am opposed to the death penalty, but that's not the issue here tonight. The issue is, not only do we want proof beyond a reasonable doubt, but I would commend this new book to the committee called Actual Innocence by Barry Scheck and Paul Newfield. The subtitle is 5 Days to Execution and Other Dispatches from the Wrongly Convicted. Barry Scheck, very famous as the godfather, I guess you'd call it, of DNA. And he goes through a whole series of cases, very beautifully written, and shows what has happened in terms of these individual cases. I don't know who's on death row in Missouri now. I don't even know the number. How many is it? How many are on death row? I don't know. I have no case in mind. I cannot point to one defendant and say, well, that's the one you really ought to look at close. I can't do that. I haven't looked at the cases. I'm just a citizen. I'm 70 years of age and therefore sort of out of touch. But I think all of us all of us, whatever our calling in life, would want to be as certain could be, that we were doing the right thing. Governor George Ryan was mentioned, I think, by Representative Lisi, a conservative, law and order Republican, no question, he's pro-death penalty. Things got to such a point in Illinois that I think he's taken 13 off of death row. By the way, those are in addition to the 80 that I, or half of them, I think, are in addition to the 80 I mentioned. George Ryan's not a softie. He's not a bleeding heart. He's not with the League of Women Voters. He's not a do-gooder, goo-goo. He's not a liberal Democrat like me. But he, as governor of Illinois, saw enough cases come through his office that he said, wait a minute, I got to do something about this. And I just pray that this committee will have the sense and sensibility to say, wait a minute, if George Ryan in Illinois is taking a second or third or whatever look at his prisoners on death row, maybe it'd be worth a two-year moratorium. We're not, after 2 years, they may well be executed, whatever the number is. But maybe we ought to take that time for a somber, sober, thorough look using DNA and other techniques to see if these people are truly the guilty perpetrators of the crime for which they were convicted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. My next witness is Sean O'Brien.
Yes, my name is Sean O'Brien. I'm here to convey the American Bar Association position on moratorium on capital punishment. I'm a part-time law professor at UMKC Law School, and I specialize in the defense of capital cases. Clarence Dexter is not the only person in Missouri who has been exonerated after having been convicted and sentenced to death. I think there's a temptation to look at Illinois and say that that's Illinois, Missouri is different. But there are some important differences between Missouri and Illinois. In the last six months, we have had actually three exonerations. The first was Clarence Dexter. The second was Ellen Reasonover, who's in the back of the room here. And the other is Clarence Dexter, who was acquitted last Friday after winning a retrial. Now, Ellen Reasonover was not on death row. I count her among those because if she were prosecuted and had to appeal under the laws as they exist today, she would not have been able to clear procedural hurdles that resulted in her acquittal, which is a real problem. The book that Senator Eagleton mentioned to you says if we take the temperature of the system, we're finding that it's producing garbage. We're not getting reliable convictions. It is time to declare a moratorium before how many innocent people to be executed is too many. There are a couple of other cases that were not death penalty cases that ought to be instructive to us. Johnny Wilson, everyone's familiar with that, a mentally retarded man who confessed to a capital crime he didn't commit in order to avoid the death penalty. And a very similar scenario played out about 10 years earlier on a St. Joe fellow by the name of Melvin Lee Reynolds, again, someone who's different. But I'd like to point out a couple of significant differences between Illinois and Missouri. One of the things that Barry Scheck and a series in the Chicago Tribune pointed out that separates Illinois from other jurisdictions is that they have a uniform process for preserving and cataloging evidence. And so in some cases, as long as 19 years after the crime, there was still the killer's genetic material to be tested. We don't have a system like that in Missouri, and so we don't have quite the same access to DNA technology. The other difference is something that Missouri has that Illinois does not have. Missouri has a tight time limit on presenting evidence of innocence. You have 90 days from the mandate on appeal. And if Illinois had the same time limit that was enforced in the same manner, the number of people who were exonerated from Illinois' death row would be zero, because none of them discovered the evidence of their innocence within the timetable that Missouri insists on. And the Missouri Supreme Court makes absolutely no exceptions to those time limits. So that's another factor that distinguishes Missouri from Illinois. The Dexter case is instructive in the sense that he had two extremes. He had a senile alcoholic attorney at his first trial who didn't do the homework into the laboratory evidence that exonerated him. And then on the other extreme, he had the best capital defense lawyer in the state of Missouri at his second trial and won exoneration. Eric Clemens was in a very similar situation. He had a horrible lawyer at his first trial, had some of the best lawyers in the state of Missouri at his second trial, and he was acquitted last Friday. But if you want to know what you're going to find when you do your study, I think you will find that there are at least eight people on death row who were defended by lawyers who are now disbarred for incompetence. At least eight. I'll name them for you if you get far enough that you want to have a hearing. You will find four of those cases where the lawyer's misconduct was so severe that it warranted a prison sentence, and the lawyer defended the ineffective assistance of counsel claims against him from prison, successfully, surprisingly. Another case where a lawyer had to be dragged from a bar, kicking and screaming, to go to his capital trial to defend his client. Right now I'm working on a case in Kansas City where a senile attorney handled two capital cases at the same time, and he forgot which client he was defending in the middle of trial. We have an affidavit from the expert witness he was examining at the trial saying, "I didn't testify to my findings because he never asked me about the case of the defendant who was on trial at the time." And if I had to do any more expert evaluations in this case, we should evaluate the defense attorney. There are some problems in Missouri. You'll find problems like that. You'll also find some very good work done. Another pattern that emerged in Illinois that you may find in Missouri is that the defender system gradually is doing a better and better job at handling the cases. But the problem comes in sometimes with cash-hungry private lawyers who may be struggling with cash flow problems or substance abuse problems who just don't do the job. And so, you know, knowing those things about the system in Missouri, I think it warrants slowing the process down, having a moratorium so that we don't execute innocent people while we're looking at the system.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be quick because I have several other people that drove a long way. I'd like to, actually, we're very honored. Bishop Gatos is here, and I'd like to call him and a couple other people. Bishop?
Thank you very much. I will be brief, but I do have something for you to read. Last year, on the 10th anniversary of the beginning of the reinstitution of the death penalty in Missouri, the bishops of Missouri, the Catholic bishops of Missouri, came up with a renewed statement against the death penalty. And I understand that we're discussing tonight the bill, the proposed bill for a moratorium, but I believe that this could be a germane thing for you to look at. We begin our statement quoting from Pope John Paul II when he was in St. Louis a year ago in January. And he said at that time, "Modern society has the means of protecting itself without definitively denying criminals the chance of reform. I renew the appeal I made most recently at Christmas for a consensus to end the death penalty, which is both cruel and unnecessary." Obviously, this is a highly fraught topic. But I do believe, surely after 11 years now, we have enough data to be able to step back and maybe take a look at the veracity of some of the important allegations that are being made surrounding this whole way of dealing in criminal justice. We should focus on the arbitrary application of the death penalty. We should focus on cost effectiveness. We should focus on that problem our previous witness was talking about inadequate counsel, about the possibility of executing the wrong individual, about racial disparities, about economic disparities. You don't see brilliant, wealthy people being executed. And the negative impact on our society. As I was coming here, I was thinking of my father. He was an electrician. And I remember him talking one time about a job he was on. He was working at a large hospital in the St. Louis area. They were putting in a new electrical service. And they do that in the very lower parts of the hospital where all kinds of strange things happen. And they had to bring a line through the pathology lab. And he was speaking about how amazed he was. They were working right in that lab at the time, and the lab assistant was there with the various things that come down to the pathology lab, and lunchtime came, and the man got out his lunchbox and sat there with all of this and sat there eating lunch, and he couldn't believe it. We can become callous to anything, and we might be becoming callous right now to a very important fact about human life. So I really urge you to take this opportunity. Thank you very much.
I'm Larry Rice, director of the New Life Evangelistic Center. I have had the tragic experience of being with 16 men as they have been put to death. I don't know if any of you have ever been and experienced this. I believe strongly that Missouri has killed innocent people, and I base that belief upon a number of different reasons, studying closely what happened in Illinois, working together with Dr. Protest in the journalism class, Rob Warden, individuals in that area. We see that the 13 individuals released, for the most part, were not released through the criminal justice system, but because of the active involvement of a journalistic class, attorneys that gave it their time, situations that we don't have here in the state of Missouri. I believe strongly Roy Roberts was innocent. I believe we could cite case after case, for example, like Bruce Kilgore, who was in a robbery. And I did not actually commit the stabbing, but his co-defendant, Willie Luckett, who did, got life. Bruce got the death penalty. We see this happen time after time. People have died that turned down a lesser plea, knowing that they weren't guilty of the death penalty. And because they turned that down, they had incompetent attorneys, they were put to death. And then being with the families of those who are killed, and see that a whole new set of victims are created. And then the victims of the initial murder, talking, and the victims' families of the initial murder, talking to them, saying, look, we put this to rest, but now here it is being brought up again, 6, 8, 10 years later, and we have to relive all of this and go through all of this, and then to parade it out before the media, and in some cases, the state that has put people to death, hope that they're doing this for some kind of closure for those victim family members, and that's not the case 6, 8, 12 weeks later. I believe that this was a bill that was very well written, and if we really are concerned about issues of life and death, we see here what it does is it gives an independent commission an opportunity to step back, away from the emotionalism that a jury is subjected to look at whether or not new evidence has come forth, which is very difficult, as you know, if that evidence was not brought up at the initial trial, to bring it up later, to take a look at the facts. Because when we kill someone, you can't bring that person back. We've got to go on and continue as a state, and they're killing in the name of the state. The reason for the moratorium is I'm convinced that if the moratorium is not put into place at the time that we put the study into place, we are going to be killing additional innocent people. This is a bill that I feel strongly is well overdue, and I don't want to see any more innocent people killed in the state of Missouri. Yes.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Simon, and I'm here representing the Missouri Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, which supports the whole bill, both the commission and the moratorium. And the reason is that we already know what the results of any even halfway objective commission study is going to be. It's going to demonstrate, as the American Bar Association found, that the death penalty is administered in a way that does not prevent the execution of innocent people, because the quality of counsel provided, as Mr. O'Brien has very cogently pointed out, is abysmal when one considers the stakes in the matter. We know from the data Professor Gallagher will be presenting this evening that it is racially skewed, that in Missouri a black life counts for 1/6 of a white life. We know it. We've got it from the figures from the Missouri Supreme Court itself. And we know that due to the passage of the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, people who are being sentenced to death now aren't getting the same due process, the same independent consideration of the merits of their federal constitutional claims that the Supreme Court counted on people getting when they approved the reinstitution of the death penalty in 1976. And for these reasons, we think that there's already probable cause to put a hold on the death penalty. And whether the people who are executed while the commission studies are innocent of the crime in the particular crime in that case or not, we know that this system is deeply flawed. And for that reason, we support the entire bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next witness is Paula Skillehorn.
Hi, my name is Paula Skillehorn, and I'm here sort of in three capacities. I'm a former crime and courts reporter for the Kansas City Star. I'm the wife of a death row inmate, and I'm also an educator who's very concerned about what kind of messages we're giving the children. I realize I'm last, and I'll keep this very, very short. I have written each of you a letter. A couple weeks ago, you should have gotten it, that detailed some of the things I found as a reporter. One thing that has not been mentioned that really concerned me, as a reporter, I was privy to a lot of information that the families of the victims never heard and that never appeared in trial. And when I hear people saying the jury has found this person guilty, we must abide by that. You need to remember that the jury quite often has not heard everything. I've seen cases where confessions of the actual killer have been kept out of one trial to convict the man who did not do the killing, and then the same confession used and considered valid in order to put that man also on death row. Quickly, someone mentioned a minute ago about keeping society safe from dangerous criminals. There are death fences that have been erected around our maximum security prisons. The security in these prisons is very, very tight. I know because I visit it 10 times a month. My husband is there. I have also interviewed many other inmates in the course of my work and after I left my work. Society is safe. Anyone that goes near that death fence dies. You don't even have to touch it. There is no opportunity for restorative justice if you kill people. As a family member, and I must tell you that when I was a reporter, I cared nothing about the family members of criminals because I figured one bad apple, the whole barrel must be spoiled. And I'm ashamed to say that that is very wrong. I have met a lot of good, hardworking, honest people whose relatives have committed horrible crimes, most often under the influence of some substance, which of course is not a defense, is not an excuse, but is indeed an explanation. You are hurting all of these people. You are punishing these people. This is the only law in Missouri that I know of that allows the state to punish the family of someone who has committed a crime. If I rob your house, you may not have someone rob mine. If I burn your house, you may not have someone burn mine. However, if I rob your child of his or her mother or father, you may indeed rob my child of me. I think that's wrong. I think we have a lot more alternatives in the year 2000 that are a lot more humane. But essentially what I would like to urge you, regardless of your opinion, if you do believe that we are, the capital punishment process is being handled properly in Missouri, a moratorium is not going to change that if you are indeed right. I don't believe that you are, however. And I'll just wrap it up to say that I try to teach my son, my students, and my 4-H members that character and integrity includes basing your decisions on research and knowledge, not emotionalism and not ignorance. I urge you to be men and women of character and integrity, and please give us the time to look very carefully at capital punishment to make sure that we do indeed not have a defective system. Thank you.
My name is Ellen Reasonover. Please remember my name and my situation as you deliberate on why there is a need for a moratorium on the death penalty in the state of Missouri. In 1983, I attempted to be a responsible citizen by giving information I had on a murder of a gas station attendant to the Delwood police. Without getting into the details of the nightmare that ensued, I ended up being convicted and sentenced to 50 years without parole. This conviction came with no evidence or eyewitness and with the knowledge that I had no prior criminal record. My 2-year-old daughter, Shamel, was left to be raised by my mother. I spent 16 and a half years in prison at one of your dehumanizing institutions. Last June, after years of legal battles and pressure from my many supporters, I was granted a hearing to look at the injustice of my conviction. The court heard how the St. Louis County Prosecutor's Office withheld key evidence and documents from my original defense attorney. The ruling of Judge Gene Hamilton was swift and just. I was released from prison immediately. What's important for you to know is that the assistant prosecuting attorney, Steve Goldman, literally begged for the death penalty in my 1983 case. I was one jury vote away from the death penalty, only one vote. Had that jury not been totally convinced of my guilt, I would have been executed by now. Those nearly 17 years snatched me from my loved ones can never, never be replaced or compensated for, never. What I ask of you tonight is to give serious consideration for a moratorium on the death penalty. You should know that even before my incarceration, I was opposed to the death penalty as inhuman and senseless. My being in prison only strengthened my position. Again, I ask that you carefully weigh the impact of the death penalty on a civilized society that ultimately you abolish it as cruel and unjust. In the meantime, a moratorium will move us in the right direction. I thank you for your time, and God bless you all.
Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, my name is Carol Angel Beck. I live in Troy, Missouri, and I've been a resident of Missouri all my life. I'm also a chapter leader for Parents of Murdered Children, Lewis and Clark Chapter in St. Charles, Missouri. This is not their, you know, they do not take a stand on the death penalty. This is my own personal. I have a statement here, but I would just like to say just a couple words that, you know, I know that Barry Schick made a complete statement, and he said that he agreed that there was no proof of an innocent executed in the United States, even though he wrote the book. And also I heard someone say, how do they tell their children that there is execution in our state? I have 6 grandchildren, and my 24-year-old daughter was murdered, an innocent victim in her own home. How do I tell my 6 grandchildren about their aunt? I am the mother of Mindy Griffin.
Who was raped and strangled by Michael Shane Worthington in her Lake St. Louis condo on September the 30th of 1995. Mindy was 24 years old and a student of finance at UNSL. She was working 2 jobs to pay her way through school. Michael Shane Worthington was also 24 years old and had been in and out of jail since the age of 13 years old. Had also earned 3.5 years of college while in jail. He was out on parole from the state of Illinois. He was defended by the very best of our defense attorneys, Scott Rosenblum, Brad Kessler, and Joe Green. And 2 weeks before the last trial date, he pled guilty to first-degree murder without taking an Alford plea. He had to state what he had done to my Mindy. He's now sitting on death row in Potosi. His DNA came back as 1 in 658 million. He is not an innocent victim on death row. Placing a moratorium on the death penalty so that a 9-member commission can look into the death penalty cases appears to me to be double jeopardy for a victim. Our Missouri Constitution states a person is innocent until proven guilty by a jury of their peers, and a judge are deemed to take a plea of guilty
Why is it we no longer trust this system? After this criminal is taken into custody by the Department of Correction in our state, they then start the appeals, first with our appellate courts, then the Missouri Supreme Court, district courts, and finally the U.S. Supreme Court. The appellate lawyers in death penalty cases are very good and also do not believe in the death penalty. We speak of double jeopardy in a criminal case, but isn't this triple or quadruple jeopardy to an innocent victim? I don't see that anyone cares whether the victim had a great attorney, the county they were murdered in, their age, race, gender, their religious preference, or their economic status has no bearing on whether they should be murdered violently. I heard no one yet tonight speak of a victim. My daughter was an innocent victim in her own home, and I asked the police why. And you know what they told me? They said she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I said she was in her own home. What gives this commission the right to play judge, jury, our appellate system, and even our Missouri Supreme Court, or to even consider the recommendations of national associations concerning a death penalty? I believe our Attorney General Jade Nixon does an excellent job on both sides of the appellate system. I have been to the Missouri Supreme Court and seen firsthand the levels of experience of the judges, and I cannot understand why a commission could question that. Missouri does not have the same problems as Illinois or Los Angeles. We are a very conservative state, and the death penalty is not given easily by a judge or a jury. I believe a moratorium on executions is a prelude to doing away with the death penalty altogether. In studies conducted separately by Smith College and the Rand Corporation, it was found that in death penalty cases, it was the nature of the crimes, not the race of the defendant or the victim, which determined the outcome of the cases. For example, white murders are twice as likely to be executed in the U.S. or black murders. In addition, white death row inmates are executed 17 months more quickly than black murderers. There are facts simply avoided by those who oppose the capital punishment. And I also wanted to tell that there are 82 men sitting on our death row in the state of Missouri. And 48 are white and 34 are black. That's not racist. If Missouri would put a moratorium on parole and probation, we would have saved tens of thousands of innocent Missouri citizens being murdered, raped, or otherwise harmed in the past three decades. If Illinois would have done this, my daughter Mindy would not have died such a heinous death by rape and being strangled not once but twice by Michael Shane Worthington, who was out on parole from the state of Illinois. Please use the money of our state to help me stop the rape and murder of our children. Instead of using your time and state money as representatives to abolish the death penalty of those criminals who took the very lives of our children and handed our family a sentence of life without parole. Thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of my daughter, Mindy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is John Angelbeck. I'm also a resident of Troy, Missouri. I grew up in the city of St. Louis. I've been a resident of the state of Missouri all of my life also. I've always believed in the death penalty, although I am a Catholic, and maybe that is against the Catholic religion, but I have always believed in the death penalty. I believe when a person murders someone, they're doing it of their own free will. No one is forcing them to murder something, and they deserve to take the consequences in the state of Missouri, and actually, if it's a capital murder case, it's the death penalty. Currently in Missouri, we have 82 death rows in, I'm sorry, we have 82 individuals on death row compared to 590 life without parole, an additional 40 with a sentence of 50 years or more. You can see that the death penalty is not given lightly. It is only given to those who meet the mitigating and aggravating circumstances. It's not like getting a parking ticket. On October 1st, 1995, our daughter, Mindy Griffin, was found murdered in her Lake St. Louis condo. Our family had no experience with the judicial system. The next 4.5 years have been an eye-opening experience. We were on a roller coaster. We went through three judges, numerous court cancellations, but in the end, we believe that the justice system was reaffirmed. Michael Shane Worthington confessed the murder of our daughter and was given the death penalty. Michael confessed to Mindy's murder in open court. He stated that he raped He strangled Mindy until she lost consciousness. He decided to rape her. She regained consciousness during the rape, and he decided to strangle it until she died. Mary Case, the coroner in St. Louis, says it takes 5 minutes for a person to die from strangulation. Sometime when you have a spare 5 minutes, sit there in silence and see how long it takes for somebody to die by strangulation. Michael was a very violent individual, personal, same age as my daughter. During the 3 years in the St. Charles County Jail, he had 50 offenses with other inmates and guards. I do not have access to his current status and behavior in Potosi, but I can only assume from the past his violence is continuing. This brings me to the point of why should we as society keep violent murders in correctional institutions for the rest of their lives? For what purpose? What is there to be gained for society? We expose state employees who work in these facilities to the possibility of injury or even death. I understand every day in our correction system in Missouri there's a confrontation between inmates and correction officers. I feel that we are taxpaying citizens need not to support the murders for the rest of their lives. These state tax dollars should be put to better use for the homeless, drug education, etc. I have seen the appeal process in our state. Very dedicated attorneys representing both the inmate and the state of Missouri, leaving no stones unturned representing both sides. I urge you to not imply the moratorium. If I understand the bill the way it's written, I could be incorrect on it, but if the moratorium is put in place, there'll be no continuing investigation or appeals for the people on death row. This would put a hold on the whole system. I had minor surgery last year. I was given sodium pentothal for the operation. While the drug was being given to me, I thought, boy, this is very easy. The only difference between the sodium pentothal given to me and a death row inmate being executed is I would wake up and he would not wake up. I think about this on a daily basis. I wish that my daughter could have died in this humane way, not the violent death she had by her murder. I thank you. Appreciate your time.
My name is Karen Long, and I'm here to say that I oppose this. Do you ever hear yourself saying, I don't watch the news, too much bad news, so I tune it out? All you ever hear is bad news, robbery, rape, murder. I know that used to be me. I would hear about a murder and think, how terrible. And just as quickly, I would put it out of my mind. Never in 100 years did I think that that could happen to me, but one night the finger of fate reached out and touched me. I became a victim. My mother and father were each shot twice in the back of the head, execution style, in the bedroom of the home they shared for 49 years. That finger of fate, Carmen Deck, has received the sentence of death by injection from the state of Missouri. On July 8, 1996, Carmen Deck had a choice, and he chose to execute my mother and father. He now wants to blame his mother, society, politicians, juries, victims' families, anyone but himself. Yet it was not a jury that decided execution for him. It was really Carmen Deck who made the decision the night he committed two first-degree premeditated murders. On March 13, 1999, Mr. Deck wrote a letter to the editor of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. In it, he stated, negativity directed at death row inmates because families of victims want murderers to be executed because it makes them feel better and they will get revenge. This is not about revenge at all. It is justice for my parents, and there is a difference. He had a choice that July 8th, and after 10 minutes of thinking, 10 minutes of pacing at the foot of the bed, he made a choice to pull the trigger 4 times. Last month, Governor Ryan of Illinois put a moratorium into effect for 3 years. I recognize there have been cases of people wrongfully put on death row in Illinois. However, this is Missouri. There are no such cases according to the Attorney General's office. I am from the Show Me State, and I need to be shown why Missouri needs to follow suit with a moratorium when we have no cases. Missouri already has the criteria it needs to carry out the sentence when these individuals have been charged and found guilty of such heinous crimes. As for what they were saying earlier on the studies, that it is more costly, that it does not deter murder, I can show figures in the opposite way, that life in prison is more costly than the death penalty. I can find studies that show murder actually does go down during the time period of an execution, and I am willing to furnish these statistics for you if you wish. There are 29 points of criteria that are looked at when charging the death penalty, so I feel that it is not taken upon lightly in Missouri. In our own case, Mr. Deck was furnished with attorneys in Missouri, paid by the state of Missouri. Since 1996, he has had 7 different lawyers. Check the Missouri handbook. These lawyers make more money than most of the prosecuting attorneys serving the different counties in Missouri. And I think that the only thing we have hardly mentioned here tonight is the victims, and they have no voice anymore. Thank you.
I'm Jim Selecki, my sister-in-law. Her sister was brutally murdered. I am not opposed to forming a committee. I have a deep, deep concern when I heard the representative say he already knew what the results of the committee was going to be. I want to make sure there are citizens on the committee and not just staffed against a number of professors from universities who seem to not be able to educate lawyers to defend witness, to defend their clients. I want to make sure that the committee is a representative of the people in the state of Missouri. I went to the internet. I pulled off these polls. 71% of the people in the United States, sampled by Gallup, in 1999, are in favor of the death penalty. 68% of those were Catholic. 68% of the Catholics say they are in favor of the death penalty. 68% of the Protestants say they are in favor of the death penalty. So let's not go tread lightly on this issue. I think it's critical that if we do have a committee that is representative of the citizens and the people of the state of Missouri and not just a special interest group. I am definitely opposed to the moratorium. I think that the system is working within the state of Missouri. Every problem that I've heard tonight has been a problem with the council that has represented the people. I sympathize with that. I think something should be done in that area. But in our case, Mr. Worthington, whichever way you want to look at it, flunked or failed a DNA test, confessed to the murder, and as Mindy's dad just said, go home tonight, stare in the mirror for 5 minutes. That's all I ask of you to do, and find out how she suffered. That gentleman should be put to death. If he is not put to death, I think he's going to present himself as a problem for other inmates, for guards. I think you're putting these other people at risk. Those are individuals whose rights should also be protected. There are people in our prison systems who are trying to correct themselves, and I believe that these killers will do nothing but to disrupt that process.
Mr. Chairman, members of the House, my name is Peggy Coleman, and I reside in St. Charles County. And my daughter, Diane, was murdered in November of 97. A very short, brief bit of information regarding Diane. Her killers are still at large. There was more than one. There were suspects picked up, released, picked up, released. And I, too, started to wonder about the justice system. I'm here tonight because I, too, went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, Catholic college. It just doesn't seem to be pertinent when you have a child that has viciously been murdered, raped, beaten, thrown in a river, hopefully never to be found. These criminals are still out on the street. Now, there's been a lot of conversation about attorneys and problems with attorneys for your criminals. I don't have problems with attorneys for the victims any more than they should have a problem. Or if they have that problem with their attorney, the victims don't have problems. It's a two-way street. And I really don't think it's fair to say the criminals have no defense. In my daughter's case, there were specialists all the way from California, which I was very disappointed in that none could be found in Missouri. Specialists from California, unfamiliar with Missouri law, that was allowed to testify. We as victims, my daughter, my other two sons, we sit here in amazement. This is the justice system. And then we turn around, and I guess it's if a problem, if it exists, is a fear that someone has a death penalty that they don't deserve, you all say justice has not been served. I want to know if justice has been served on behalf of our murdered ones. There was a termination of part of life for all of us who remain here on earth without our loved ones. This is a termination just not of a mother. This is of a mother, a father, a daughter, an aunt. This touches everybody's life. It takes away a lot of your own life and existence. Does this not count? How many victims have received justice? Where is our commission to study our losses? I wholeheartedly advocate a study. And I am tremendously against a moratorium. Please consider that there are two sides. There is the criminal and there is the victim. Thank you.